It's time for the Access of Easy podcast, the weekly technology digest that keeps you ahead of the curve. Brought to you by EasyDNS.com.
Welcome back, ladies and gentlemen, to Access of Easy 318, 318 episodes, 317 in the bag. And after we're done this, 318 in the bag. This is where we talk about hacks, cracks, attacks, and of course, we'll be spitting out the facts too. And I'm Len. Joey is not here this week, but I do have somebody that's joining me named Wayfaring. Wayfaring buddy, how are you?
I'm great, Len. Thanks for having me. Joey is, he's stateside, right?
He's in DC, of all places. He's living it up, watching the former Redskins team, currently the Commanders, perform their craft, and hopefully he'll be a happy guy and they'll win. If not, at least he got to see that piece of junk. What are they playing? FedEx Field? Is that what it's called these days?
Is it?
Yeah,
really?
It's FedEx.
Wow. I didn't know that. FedEx is a Memphis company. I'm surprised they've got naming rights to a DC arena, although Memphis doesn't have an NFL team, so
yeah. Well, there you go. And they used to play at RFK, and that's actually being torn down this year, so unfortunately I learned that. But anyways, enough about sports talk, because obviously I'm not with it these days. I haven't watched much football in over a decade. Last week's quote, for people who are wondering: a pessimist sees the difficulty in every opportunity, and an opportunist sees the opportunity in every difficulty. That was by one, the only, Winston Churchill. We had a winner from this. His name is Rich, so congratulations to him. But this week's quote, for anybody out there that wants to play along with us, the quote is, when a well-packaged web of lies has been sold gradually to the masses over generations, the truth will seem utterly preposterous, and its speaker, a raving lunatic. By, well, let's hopefully somebody will know the answer. Do not Google it. This has to come from your head, your own knowledge, or maybe the people around you. You could ask them. Maybe they might have an answer to this. With Wayfaring, without you giving the answer away, do you have any idea who is the person that said this saying?
No, I don't know who it is.
All right. There you go. So I'm in the same boat as you. So again, no searching the answer. Must post at the bottom of the post and in the comments section, what is your answer? And the first answer gets their domain or hosting renewal on the house. But before we dive in, just want to make sure that people out there like, subscribe, and share, because we want to get as many people on the Access of Easy bandwagon as possible. And with that, we could dive right into the first story, which is security risks looms over public Zoom meeting links. And we're approaching Halloween, and it's a good time, in my personal opinion, to talk about zombies. And in this case, we're talking about zombie links that are associated with Zoom, the virtual meeting software. Everybody, I suppose, has used Zoom in the past 3 years. It gained a lot of popularity in 2020 for not so obvious reasons, or very obvious reasons, in fact, sorry. But anyways, the zombie Zoom links are links to Zoom meetings that have been created by, well, looks like by attackers without the knowledge of or the consent of the employee whose Zoom personal meeting ID or the PMI is being used. These links can be dangerous because they can allow attackers to impersonate employees and steal confidential information. So the PMI is a permanent identification number linked to your Zoom account. I wonder what could go wrong with that. And the Zoom link, which could include a password to a meeting link, can sometimes be indexed by Google. Again, what could go wrong with all this too? But anyways, so when someone clicks on one of these zombie Zoom links, they could be taken into a Zoom meeting that is controlled by an attacker, and the attacker could then impersonate the employee and steal confidential information from other participants in the meeting. A security company known as Krebs on Security found that they found working Zoom meeting links for a few different companies. In fact, the NFL, LinkedIn, Oracle, Humana, Disney, Warner Brothers, Uber, and probably a bunch of others that they didn't note here. That's incredible that they're easily able to find this through looking through Google. And there's a number of organizations that and individuals that they could do to protect themselves from these zombie links. Organizations should require employees to use a passcode to join a meeting and only use registered or domain verified users. And individuals should always be careful of clicking on links and emails and should only join Zoom meetings from trusted sources. and additional tips you could do when joining. Do not share your PMI with anybody. Use strong passwords to your Zoom account. And this is the big one here. Enable two-factor authentication, because by doing so, you could add another layer of security and it would be harder to impersonate anyone using Zoom. Wayfaring, what are your thoughts?
This is a perfect example of the trade-offs between convenience and security risk, because a lot of these links are like basically you just have the PMI and the password directly in the URL, right? So once that link exists, you can just enter the meeting quickly. And yeah, people like this because it's super convenient. You don't have to put in a new password for every meeting. You can just click on a link, boom, you're in. But there's a trade-off, you know? And yeah, it's for thousands of companies to have these links that just kind of permanently exist now on the web is not great.
What's not noted here, and I couldn't find any information about it, is that that company that was able to find those Zoom meeting links from NFL, LinkedIn, and all those other companies I mentioned, doesn't say if they were able to, or anybody was able to get any confidential information from any of them. And at least two of them I could see are publicly traded, maybe more. So this could have potentially, depending on what type of information they got, it could have impacted shareholders negatively. So I guess this information will be disclosed moving forward, because they don't want to keep this information away from their shareholders or potential shareholders. So this could be some really nasty stuff. Zoom, I don't know if you still use it, but I know I have used it in the past, but I haven't used it in a long time. And I, you know, moving forward, I'm going to be looking at this with a little bit suspicious now if I see any sort of Zoom link. I don't know about you.
I used it like in 2020. It was the big one. I think they were kind of just, they were the video meeting company that was like most prepared to deal with everybody going remote so quickly, but I never use it anymore. I tend to gravitate towards Google Meet. Seems to be a better product. So,
and Signal, and there's a lot of different privacy focused options out there.
But that's at enterprise level, there aren't a lot of companies that are using Signal, unfortunately. Hopefully that changes.
We will try twisting ours moving forward.
Yeah.
Let's move on. We could talk about a lawsuit against OpenAI. And these are the good people who have developed ChatGPT. Then ChatGPT has made a lot of headlines in the past 12 months or so. This lawsuit is for using copyrighted material that is used to train its AI models. And the plaintiffs in this lawsuit include Sarah Silverman, Paul Tremblay, George R.R. Martin, and John Grisham, I think I pronounced that correctly. I don't know. Anyways, they allege that the program has been taking their content without their consent, and using that to help train the AI tool, which is a clear violation of the U.S. Copyright Act. What are the odds that OpenAI is going to bust out the AI lawyers to defend themselves in the court here? Because this might be a golden opportunity for them to do so and actually show off that it actually works, and you could use this to basically nuke the whole law industry. But anyways, OpenAI, they argue that the use of copyrighted material is protected by fair use. And fair use is a legal doctrine that allows for the limited use of copyrighted material without permission from the copyright holders, for the purpose of such as criticism, commentary, news reporting, teaching, scholarship, or research. And OpenAI argues that the use of copyrighted material is transformative because it creates something new and different from the original work. They also argue that the use of the copyrighted material is limited and does not harm the market from the original works. The outcome of this is going to have significant impact on the future of AI development. And if the plaintiffs are successful, it can make it more difficult for companies to develop AI models and to use that to copyrighted data to help train their models. And also, this could stifle the innovation of the field of AI. But what content are they taking from these folks? And how are they using this to train their AI models? I mean, are these people just full of themselves, thinking that the work is just so great that AI is taking it and using it to improve themselves? I don't know, man. I think they're just blowing smoke up here, and maybe their egos are too big for their own good. But I don't know. What are your thoughts on this one?
This is so confusing to me, because I guess the plaintiffs, if you want to call them artists, the artists bringing the suit against OpenAI are saying that it's an infringement of their copyright to even use it to train the model. And OpenAI has two arguments. They're saying that that's not the case, but their bigger argument to me seems to be like the output of OpenAI. For example, in ChatGPT, if you ask it to write you an essay in the voice of one of these authors, the output is different from like the input that what they trained it on, which is the actual product of the artist. So the whole thing's very confusing to me. I don't really see I don't really see how it's infringing on the copyright, but I might be completely wrong on that. Cause that the thing I started thinking about was, you know, what happens if I go to ChatGPT and say, write me a poem in the voice of, you know, so-and-so, whoever, like name a good poet. And then I take the result and publish it myself. Is there a copyright infringement from OpenAI that I've infringed on? So who owns the actual output of ChatGPT? Do you know? It's got to be OpenAI, right? It's got to be Microsoft.
It must be. I haven't. You got to go through terms of service, the terms of T's and C's, to figure out who actually owns it. I assume it's going to be them, but then that would create some sort of, that would help out the cause of this lawsuit. The plaintiffs might have some, they might be able to, I don't want to say win this, but there might be some validity to us. But really, like, I'm looking at their contribution to society. Is it that great that a AI program cannot troll their work and to use it, mimic it, alter it in some way, even in the smallest of way, to, and it's harming them? Like, I don't know. I'm looking at this. It's like they're so thin-skinned. That's the way I'm looking at it. Granted, it's their work. I understand that. They must work very hard to do it. But really, come on, man. Like, let the AI program take it and use it and alter it in some way, shape, or form. It's for the greater good, I suppose. But I don't know.
Yeah, I just don't fall anywhere on this personally. Do you lean one way or the other personally? Like, I just don't really, I don't care that much. I don't use ChatGPT. I try not to feed the AI any data. So like, I don't care that much, but it did make me think about other things. Like let's say an artist, a musician on YouTube does a cover of a song by somebody else. And that just brings attention. Like Luke Combs did that cover of Fast Car. This was like a kind of a big story in the US. Who's the original singer, Tracy Chapman. And it brought a huge amount of attention to that song. So it was like a cover of an existing song, and it brought a huge amount of attention to it. So I don't know, in some ways you could say that if people are typing into ChatGPT, write me an essay in the voice of George R.R. Martin, that's probably a fan of George R.R. Martin. It's probably going to bring more attention to that guy's initial works anyways. So I don't know.
That's a good point. You know, if we wait long enough, Father Time will take care of everything, and they won't have any opportunity to complain. So
I do like your idea of like OpenAI should just have ChatGPT be their lawyer and just just model it on, like, I don't know, OJ's cases or something. If the words don't fit, you must acquit.
What a glorious opportunity here to showcase what they have. Yeah, and if it could do the Johnny Cochran impression, it's it could definitely win the case. But let's move on. We'll talk about the it's gonna be interesting, this one. Canada imposes mandatory registration for podcast platforms. This is under government authority. And this is from the Canadian Radio, Television, and Telecommunications Commission, CRTC. Very popular here in, or at least well-known here in Canada. They're now requiring online streaming companies to register their podcasts and their streaming services. This new requirement is part of the Online Streaming Act, which became law this past April. And the act requires streaming services to pay into the Canadian media system to support Canadian content. This is all part of, there's a huge butting of heads between Meta in the Canadian government and Google, or Alphabet, and in the Canadian government. For people who aren't aware, the Canadian government would like those two companies to pay for publishing articles, or at least pointing to newspaper articles that are published and sourced here in Canada. So if it's say from the Globe and Mail, CBC, whatever, whoever's the source of that, And if Google or Alphabet or Meta, they publish it on their platform, they want a some of the money sent to whoever wrote the article, the company that did it. So that's part, basically it. This is a whole part of it. But part of this registration process is for platforms that they have hosts that are for very large podcasts. And the ones that earn that over $10 million per annum, they're going to be needing to register. So individual podcasts, for the most part, won't be needing to register. But larger podcasts that actually draw in $10 million or more will be subjected to being registering, or else who knows what's going to happen. Of note, video games and audiobook services are exempt from this rule. So I'd like to thank everyone that's watching or listening to this, to our audiobook over here, about the Access of Easy, because clearly we're not a podcast. This is an audiobook, so we don't have to register. But this is raising a lot of concerns for people about the threat of net neutrality and freedom of speech, because this could, one could say, I'm not saying me, saying somebody could say, looking at this out of third-party view, could be a method of controlling the podcaster's message. If that's the case, then definitely it could be a threat to freedom of speech. But I have nothing else to say about this. I'm going to throw it over to you.
Yeah, it could be. It absolutely is. And your audience here knows that you and Joey also are the Canadian Bitcoiners, right? And you have a separate webinar series that you do over there every Monday. I think you guys touched on this in your last show, and I liked Joey's take where it's not going to slow down right now. It's any creator who makes over 10 million, that's going to drastically fall. Like the government never steps back. They never say it's going to be people with 10 million, and then 2 years from now say, we actually don't care about the smaller guys. We're just going to go for even bigger ones. So they're always going to continue to inch forward. And so it'll eventually be anybody who makes any money at all. And then it'll be anybody who wants to put any kind of video online. You'll have to register with the government first. It's insane. I think it's absolutely a threat to free speech. And I think the good people of Canada should push back against this legally, of course.
Well, $10 million, if they do reduce that number, which could potentially happen, then it's going to make it easier to reach that goal. So it's going to capture a wider net here, or cast a wider net. Also of note, I'm going to go a little bit into the weeds here. I remember when I was younger, the thing that we always strive to get, I want to make $1 million. And that $1 million, that's a lot of money. I could then retire. But now $1 million in Canadian terms doesn't get you very far. So that 10 million today, even if they don't change a number, just a simple debasing of the Canadian currency, it's going to make it much easier for any podcast to achieve that 10 million. 10 million is still a lot of money today, but wait a few years. $1 million was a lot of money. It's still, a good chunk of change, but it certainly doesn't have the same type of purchasing power it did before. So that's another thing to consider, is that $10 million every day, it's a melting ice cube, and it just becomes easier and easier to reach that goal. So that's another way to look at it.
Yeah. And then, I don't know what the registration means. It looks like they just take your personal information, but that's how it always starts. Right? First, you've got to register. And then, like the Canadian government already has your information if you're a registered business. So right now it's like, it's only going to push forward from there. It's not like they just want this information for no reason.
That's why I go by the name Pablo. And it's easy for me to fly under the radar. So so I'll keep moving on. Canada seems to be the recipient of some cyber attacks. And there are reports that the cyber attacks on the Canadian government websites by an Indian hacking group called Indian Cyber Force. And this has taken place. Now, Wayfaring, I'm not sure if you ever listened to our show before, but Joey and I, me being Pablo, we rank all the names that we come across. So Indian Cyber Force, it's basically 0 to 5. What would you rank that name? Sometimes we come with some really doozies or terrible. Sometimes they're decent, so we give them a decent score. I'm going to go first. Indian Cyber Force, it kind of sounds kind of cheesy to me. I'll go 2.5 out of 5. Nothing spectacular here, but what would you give this name?
I'd give it, you went 2.5. Indian Cyber Force. I'm on the fence about it because I love the U.S. Space Force. I think that's a really strong name. So Indian Cyber Force, it's growing on me the more I say it. So I'm going to give it a 3.8.
Oh yeah. paying homage to the Space Force.
And so I'm gonna see if they have a logo.
So this group claims to have taken down the websites of such departments like the Canadian Armed Forces, the House of Commons, and Elections Canada. And the Canadian government has confirmed that attacks have taken place, and they say that no sensitive data have been compromised to date. The attacks are believed to have been carried out by a distributed denial of service attack. This is a DDoS attack. And a DDoS attack is a type of cyber attack in which a large number of computers are used to overwhelm a website with traffic, making it inaccessible to legitimate users. And the Indian Cyber Force is a known hacking group that has targeted Indian and international websites in the past. And the group is believed to be motivated by patriotism as a desire to show off its technical skills. And this is all likely due to cooling relations between Canada and India. I'm not sure if you're aware, but our Prime Minister Trudeau did travel to India for a G20 summit. And he and Modi, from what I understand, they didn't have the best of times with each other. And since then, there's been some back and forth and a little bit they dispelled one of the diplomats here from Canada to India. And I think India did the same in reverse. And plus, then India said they're going to be asking Canadians visiting to India to get visas. So it's a real mess. But one thing of note, and this is, I'm not saying this is true or not, I'm just reading this right from a news source. India has officially labeled Canada as an international terrorist sanctuary. This is from India. I'm not saying that we are. They say, quote, a safe haven for terrorists, for extremists, and for organized crime. These are in the words of the Ministry of External Affairs. These are pretty damning words. And, you know, looking at how the relations have cooled, the Indian Cyber Force, I could see them doing this for patriotism. But do they have a logo?
I'm telling you right now, you've got, can you Google their logo? It's amazing.
Oh, I'm going to have to.
I'm going to bump the 3-8 up. I might have to. It's very good.
They have a LinkedIn?
No, that's, there's a cyber intelligence force, which is probably a government. Look at the GitHub one. Cause I think they've got.
This is going to make for great audio.
Oh yeah, it's an audio. Yeah, I forgot that it was just an audio book. I forgot we're an audio book. So what we're looking at
here is, I see that. You know what it kind of reminds me of? And it, a little bit, because I see that the tiger in there, it almost reminds me of the Tamil Tigers type of logo. And for anybody that's kind of remembers that, I'm looking at that. Yeah, you know what? I'm going to bump it up to 2.5. I'm going to give it a solid 3. I don't want to go any higher than that, though. But yeah.
It's strong. It's very strong. So I'm happy with it. Also, like, you're not showing a lot of technical sophistication by just doing a DDoS attack. It's not, and it was just their public websites, right? It wasn't like an internal Canadian government system. It was just an external public-facing website that they DDoSed. You know, I don't know the exact method of attack, but it's just jamming up the ports to the website so that it runs slowly or doesn't load. Like, it's not a super sophisticated hack. I don't know. India, don't be doing this. So you should settle your problems with Canada some other way.
Use diplomacy. I have to say one thing, though. They did attack one of the websites, Elections Canada. We don't have an election going on right now. We're supposed to have one sometime between tomorrow and the next 2 years. It's just because of the way the Canadian politics works. So the fact that there's no election going on and they're attacking Elections Canada right now, it's better they're attacking it, but it's good that it's being done not during election time. It could be really problematic if it was done during an election and it causing havoc for people trying to access the website. So I'll say that. Hopefully they don't do it at a time during election, because then it could really create some problems.
Yeah, I don't know. I didn't know that there was beef between Canada and India. So
yeah,
I hope you guys worked that out.
Apparently, we're a safe haven for terrorists, according to the Ministry of External Affairs. So that's why I watch when every time I open a door, I look both ways quickly just to make sure nobody's after me.
Oh well, yeah, were those all those guys in the truck? Is that the trucks? Is that who they're talking about?
I don't want to get into this anymore.
It's not good. All right, we won't get into it.
We have some critical vulnerabilities that were uncovered in WSFTP software. And when I read this story, I had to stop for a moment, because WSFTP, I used this software way back in the 90s, this was one of the premier FTP clients that we use as a Windows user way back in the day. And I can't believe it's still being used today. It must have a lot of good going for it because it's still being used and, you know, the longevity and all that. But man, this thing's got legs. Good for them for keep going on. Anyways, well, there's two recently disclosed bugs with respect to WSFTP, one of which is a pre-authentication remote code execution, RCE. These are absolutely the worst. The other is a directory traversal vulnerability. Both are rated critical severity, and Progress has released patches for all affected users. So if you are an affected user, you have the ability to upgrade, patch your program, and move from there. So both of these types of attacks, they give the remote user the ability to access and take advantage of your computer. So if you are a WSFTP user, number one, good for you for using this program. Maybe you're a decades old user and still using it. But number two, definitely upgrade to the latest version. Patch it, because if you do not, you're opening yourself up to some holes over here that somebody could take advantage, execute code on your computer, steal data, which obviously you don't want to have stolen, and could cause some real problems for you. So do yourself a favor, upgrade that guy, and sleep good at night.
Yeah, the big thing is that it allows for remote execution of code, which you never want, right? They can lock your computer down. They can take the files. They can lock your computer down, tell you, you know, you've got to pay them to unlock it, things like that. So update those. I've only ever used, was it CyberDuck? That's the FTP client I use. So
I don't think I've used an FTP client proper for a long time. I use the one I just type FTP on my command line in Linux, and it opens up, and it opened, and I use the command line version FTP. I don't use a graphical one. I'm old school, man.
That's advanced stuff right there. So Linux just has to have in one of their distributions, it has an FTP.
I think it comes native because it's so small, that FTP client. I don't recall ever coming across a distribution that didn't have that command line FTP program. Mm-hmm. It's just like having Nano or Lynx, Gopher. Like, these are just like very generic, very like, what was it? Not very resource intensive programs. And they're so universally, like, you could just use them even today. It does take a little bit of time to figure it out, but they work. They work fine. And that's the one I use. But anyways, WSFTP, upgrade your program if you haven't. If not, you're just going to be a sucker because you're going to have your data stolen. So Wayfaring, hope you had a good one. This is a good episode. Thank you for joining in. And any last thoughts before we sign off?
No, thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. How long have y'all been doing this show? You said 318 episodes?
Yeah, we started just before 300. I'm guessing 290-something. So we've been at this for about close to 30-ish, 35-ish, I'm guessing, and give or take. No, nice. Sorry, 20, 25-ish. Sorry, my bad, 20. Yeah, somewhere around there. So, yeah. We haven't been there since the beginning. But anyways, with that, everybody, take care. And next week, we'll be back with a regular scheduled program with Joey and myself. So until then, take care.
Unless you like this one. If you like this one, tell us in the comments, and then I'll replace Joey.
Or me. Or like, I'm replaceable too.
Take care.